He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin. This is Car Keys.
And it was a fun weekend for Jay. He'll give us a little report on it, I think, in a while. I also want to start off on a safety note. Jill, you'll like this because I ran in, didn't run into, excuse me, bad pun, bad whatever it is.
About to run about into.
I interviewed a bicyclist, biker, this weekend who came in to see me about something else, real estate oriented, but then started to rant about the dangers of biking getting a lot worse on the roads, as you will agree, for drivers too, because he has seen a number of cars coming at him, although he's been in the travel lane, the correct travel lane, which means crossing lines and weaving to get back on track. And I also had the same issue over the weekend with somebody who was clearly not focused on the road, and his car was steering across the lane. I flashed my lights, and this is a safety measure to anybody who knows how to flash your lights using your turn signal. And many people don't seem to know that, but it's a European common way Europeans drive on autobahns and on the highway byways when they want to get around somebody that's going slower than they are in a passing lane or a high-speed lane, etc. But flashing lights will do a lot to get your attention. And I flashed my lights, and there was a big swerve because I was already starting an evacuation plan in case, which I thought he'd notice, or she, whoever it was, would. But just in case, I was looking for my way off the road. Jay, do you want to jump in?
No, I was just wondering about the evacuation. I thought you were going to jump out of the car.
I didn't have to. But I flashed my lights very quickly. I had three or four flashes quick. The person obviously saw it if they didn't see me first, and they made a quick adjustment.
Hold on. So the car coming at you was going across the line?
Yes.
To go around a bicycle?
No. It was just a car situation. This is just talking about this problem of people who are texting or otherwise distracted.
Just totally
with
not
bicyclists,
focused on
walkers, cars coming the other way.
Pets,
doesn't really
squirrels.
Matter. I am also waiting to hear what...
Lane assist is a great tool in a car, then. Is that what you're saying?
That's what you might be saying, if it's indeed
no,
working.
No, because the number of people who are happy to pass in Lime Rock because they think that the person is going too slow are not going to be assisted by lane assist. The only thing they're going to be assisted by is getting a nice ticket. No, seriously, yeah. Sure, we can have lane assist. Sure, we can joke about it.
Okay.
It's just bad.
Okay. Anyway, so I would like to encourage drivers to stop texting. It's at an epidemic level as far as I'm concerned. But bicyclists are really concerned, apparently, this one was, because, of course, they are on very lightweight vehicles that aren't going to survive a crash with any kind of moving missile of a vehicle, be it a truck, even a motorcycle.
And they supposedly and a car. Have the right of way. I mean, as frustrating
yes.
as it is, they have the right of way. And
but we do know that they also take their liberties with traveling in the car lane, especially when there are not adequate bike lane widths to, as we know, that don't exist around here on many of the state highways and almost all of the town roads. There are no bike lane marks on the town roads, incidentally. We're lucky if many of our town roads have center lines indicating an attempt at having you travel in the correct lane.
I prefer when they don't have center lines because then you can use the whole road.
Well, that's true.
That is what's
when you
happening.
Have a solid yellow line, you're not supposed to cross
that's
it
right.
out
it's
of
true.
Your lane.
But if there's no line, you could, you know.
If there's no line, you can pass anywhere.
I'm sorry.
Now, I get your drift, Jay, and I acknowledge the
workability of
it. So that's the safety issue I wanted to start out with on this show. We can now move on to other things.
Before we do, I just want to say that there was recently a study. It appears that if people drive an hour a day, they spend a vast percentage of that hour on their device. Not driving. I mean, they're driving, but they're using that time to do their email.
I've long been an advocate of the concept of having, if a car was moving, that they put something in your phone that would keep it from operating. Because there'd be a sensor in the phone that would tell you that you were...
Great idea, but if you're the passenger...
Oh, here we go. Here's Jim.
No, but as a passenger, not an issue. I'm talking about...
So you can always avoid it. I mean,
but the driver's phone should not be working, and I don't know how they'd figure that out, but that would be a nice thing to happen, and I'm sorry for those who want to have the freedom of use of
watching the movie that they were watching last night, downloading, streaming, binge-watching while they're driving. All right.
Next, Jay, why don't you report in what you did this weekend, because you were up at a bike and fly situation, which did
I was going to go right back to you and while we were on the bicycle topic and ask you about what you had to report on your vehicle test this weekend.
I did do a vehicle test. I tested an electric bike, and it was very interesting. I don't think I'm ready for it, but I can see how many people could be. It's not true electric in that you do not stop pedaling and have the bike continue along under its own power. But what it is it's a pedal boost kind of electric motor situation. And they have different...
Like a hybrid?
It's a hybrid.
It's a hybrid. Yes, it's a hybrid. And you are pedaling, but you have the option of changing the amount of boost that the electric motor in the bike will give your pedaling power. You also have a multi-gear box on the bike itself with, I think there were 7 gear ratios in the rear derailleur on the bike I had, so that you get boost at you have many speeds at which, or many speed options at which to get your boost, which will get you up probably any hill. The batteries are lithium-ion batteries. I asked about the durability and range of them. The person who was at the table offering bike rides, demonstration bike rides for people, didn't really know a lot about that, but he did say they seemed to range between 30 and 50 miles, and that probably is directly attributable to what gear you're in and what kind of terrain you're on.
Yeah, and the boost you get. So obviously it's like everything else. It's a trade-off. More boost, less range.
Anyways, 50 miles is enough to go anywhere in any day on most bikes without having to recharge. But you just plug them into a regular outlet, too. There isn't a sort of a 240-volt charger like you have for the electric cars.
So let me bring up one problem with – and I think the concept is great. I think electric bikes, mostly for commuting purposes, is just a great concept. But I was looking at this kid on one of the hybrids yesterday at Great Barrington Airport, and he was – no pun intended – he was flying. And it brings up the issue of speed on a bicycle. Those bikes can go really, really fast. And I know in Europe, where everything is governed, there are laws for vehicles going over 40 k's an hour, which is like 25 miles an hour, you can get your hybrid bike chipped so that it can actually – otherwise, they're limited 25 miles an hour. And so the whole point is – these hybrid bikes will go way faster than 25 miles an hour.
The bike isn't.
So now you're riding a bicycle on the road at speeds that
the bike itself is not limited to 25 miles an hour. The hybrid boost is apparently cuts off at a range, at least in the U.S., apparently between 25 and 40, depending on the type of bike or whatever the battery pack is there. So people aren't. I don't know many people except racers that can sort of go 40 miles an hour on a bike easily for a long period of time. But with the boost of the electric battery, 40 is pretty fast. I agree with Jay. 25 is probably safer. But the bikes can go as fast as you can pedal them. Any bike can go as fast as you can pedal it. And with derailleur gears, often offering 21 different combinations of speed levels, from ultra low so you can go up the steepest mountain trail without any effort, to ultra high, which might get you, if you've got powerful leg power, 40 miles an hour, or maybe, I don't know if you can do it any faster except going downhill. But the batteries will not apparently continue boosting effortlessly or helping you boost your pedal power above a certain speed.
I also saw an 800-horsepower Mustang at Bike and Fly.
And it can fly.
It was bad.
Did it have wings that came out of the side of it?
No, very discreet.
Great. It was a Pegasus.
Well, a great car, and it was actually it was a tuner car developed by the company that actually did the research and development for the new Ford Mustang GT,
350 Shelby
GT and 500.
Well, if you'll open up your magazine in front of you, Jay, you'll see one's being given away if you buy enough tickets, short of the cost of the car. And it says what that horsepower is. But this is a good time to move into horsepower in vehicles because they are going up, as intimated by an 800-horsepower Mustang. The latest Ford 2020, the Explorer is going to have a 400-horsepower V6 supercharged version of its now currently 365-horsepower limit in the 2019 and earlier versions.
So what, people want more power?
Well, let me tell you, horsepower is still selling vehicles. And I am one to tell anybody that has listened to this show already about the fact that I have leased a Jeep Cherokee with the Turbo 4 engine, which puts out 271 horsepower. It's a variant of the Turbo 4 that's used, I think, in the Alfa Romeo Stelvio or whatever the SUV is. But it's a fabulous engine, and it doesn't need to be 400 horsepower, but it puts the two other engines to the Cherokee vehicle line to shame as far as making it a fun-to-drive vehicle if you are one wanting to drive a fun-to-drive SUV. Now, Jay has got his fun-to-drive vehicle in his Touareg because he's got a diesel. And as we all, those who know diesels, diesels are have very high torque and give very good accelerator force as a result. But to that end, the diesel wars are picking up in the diesel trucks in the F-150s and the Chevy 1500s and the Ram 1500 pickups. And the war that is developing is a miles per gallon bragging war. The Ford F-150 is currently apparently certified at 30 miles per gallon on a highway, which for a pickup truck with any engine in it is pretty good. Chevrolet is about to introduce a new redesigned straight-six diesel, and they're claiming 30 to 40 miles per gallon range between, I think it's 50 and 65 miles an hour, but they don't have it certified yet, so they can't actually tell us what it's going to be. And the Ram is not far behind. FCA is not far behind, that is, and they're trying to get their latest diesel redesigned so it will beat the Ford certified range of 30 miles per gallon. So this is going to give new life maybe to diesel trucks other than what's already there, except that the engines seem to be like a $4,000 to $7,000 option above the gasoline version of the truck, which would take an awful lot of miles before you'd ever pay back that differential, the engine differential.
So you basically say that nothing has changed in 15 years, 20 years.
It gets dampened down by certain situations.
I was just reading this morning, we're driving more. And basically too much. So in this day and age when we talk about, you know, endangering our planet and restricting emissions and all that good stuff, we drive probably 20-30% more on the whole than we did 25 years ago. And the numbers are, I think we drive 43% more with 25% more larger population. So do the math, you know, 41.43 divided by 1.2 something.
What?
Anyway, so we're driving 20-25% more than we used to 25 years ago.
Yeah.
And the problem is also we are driving more in the areas where it is the most a problem, which is in urban areas, where we really should be driving less. And to go full circle, you know, it brings up the issue of public transportation in and around the cities. So that's all, a little tidbit on our driving habits. So things haven't changed, they just haven't gotten any better. And we're not learning, and we're still doing the same thing.
Well, driving is a freedom issue, too, which doesn't come up in the discussions. Because
Is what? I'm sorry.
A freedom of choice issue because you can make a left turn anytime you want and go off the route that you're going on to get to a destination if you get
fine,
distracted.
But you're talking about, you know, what we do here, which is all very nice. We do a lot of country driving, and we go from A to B, and we have four different ways of going. and three of them are pleasant drives. If you're in and around a city and commuting an hour each way to and from work every day, there's nothing pleasant about the drive.
Well, L.A. is a perfect example
of that. Well, there's L.A., there's New York. I mean, every city. I mean, some are worse than others, but none of them are very
down in the southeastern.
The first and best thing, in my view, that anybody can do is start thinking which is the sort of common way, is you take a fact like commuting is wretched and inefficient, and then you transpose it to a country area and you start talking about how, well, it's a right to drive. And I believe that you might actually come up with a more solution-based model if you were to apply some critical thinking. And it's like, all right, how do we minimize the problems of commuting from a climate, from all of those perspectives, rather than turning it into a massive conversation that then leaves out the number, like the choking pollution in certain Asian cities, for example.
I hate to break it, but the one and easy solution that always seems to work, and this is not going to be very popular, but when the price of gas goes up, people drive less. Because every time you get in the car, you think about, this is going to cost me whatever it's going to cost me. Do I really need to do this trip or do I not? Or if I'm going to do this trip, how many birds can I kill with this one stone?
We're getting into a very sensitive area of discussion because right now you've got California and maybe a couple other, some other states fighting the current administration over trying to maintain the attempted increase of miles per gallon requirement capability of vehicles, which might also help along with higher gas prices in cutting down driving, but it would cut down maybe some of the higher horsepower versions of vehicles that are now currently online. And you've got the current administration trying to tell California that they can't maintain their high miles per gallon standards. Now, I, for one, am not happy with the miles per gallon standards that the last administration was trying to impose upon the auto industry, because I don't think that they were trying to include trucks and SUVs, which are not aerodynamically able to probably make 35 or 45 miles per gallon on a fleet average situation, and they would drag down the ability of the car makers to achieve that kind of miles per gallon thing. So the current administration wants to nix that and revise everything down to a more rational level. The automakers, except for one, which is FCA at the moment, were in agreement in signing a letter to the president saying, please don't lower the standards that we were fighting for, because we've got, they've been working their way up to achieving those standards, which I think were too high. But the ones that the current administration wants to drop down to are probably too low. I think passenger cars should be the most restricted ones to keep the highest MPGs, and large pickup trucks should not be burdened too much. So,
in terms of,
you're not going to get gasoline engines to go 45 miles per gallon in a pickup truck, Jay. It isn't going to happen. And don't smile at me and start arguing. The diesels might get you there, but short of electric boosts and that kind of thing, you're not going to get the larger trucks or 4,500 pound cars easily able to get 45 miles per gallon. And it just isn't going to happen unless you want to put four-cylinder pickup trucks with electric boost into some of the pickups, which Chevrolet's trying to do with the Silverado. But it's not going to get 45 miles a gallon or 35 miles a gallon on an overall situation. None of the cars will get what they're stated to get anyways if people don't turn them off every time they get out of at a post office and or don't sit on the side of the road and chat with their friends,
but if the
live
price
their engines idling.
Okay, but if the price of gas is totally low, then why? How are you going to get anyone to care anyway?
Well, you're not.
Right. But that's again, that's the bigger.
But nobody's pushing for gas prices to go up because the federal government can't get a gas tax in place to fix bridges because the legislatures will not vote for it because their constituents don't want it. The states are having the same hard problem doing that.
And let's talk about tolls. No, let's not. Let's go back
to
horsepower. What did you want to say?
So the point is here, so if you exclude trucks from any kind of fuel mileage requirements, then more people are going to drive trucks, and the offerings on the market are going to be truck-based, and you're going to have more, even more truck-like vehicles, because those will be excluded from the fuel mileage requirements. I just don't see the point of excluding the trucks altogether.
No, I think they should be different segments of miles per gallon, for not an overall fleet average, which is what has been on the boards under the previous administration.
Okay, so now you're fine-tuning the thoughts a little bit.
No, they're already fine-tuned. I'm just re-describing it.
So while we
and we're not going to debate this for the rest of the
show. No, we're not, because we are moving on to our safety tips.
Right.
Because there are 4 minutes left, so go.
Safety tips. As we get into
tips
summer,
is stupid, but
no,
you know.
As we go into a summer season, more and more people get on the road and travel, take road trips. For young drivers, it may be their first road trip, and a road trip can be anything, you know, can be a 50-mile trip. Doesn't have to be a cross-country trip. Use your GPS or Google Maps or whatever it is device you use to figure out your destination. I think a lot of dangerous situations happen when people like miss a turn on the highway and are confused, don't know where they are, don't know what to do, don't know what the next move is going to be. Put your destination in your GPS and follow your GPS. You miss a turn, no big deal. It will reroute you, tell you where to go. No stress. I go down to New York very often. I always use my GPS. Why? Because traffic conditions can change. Best routes change all the time. And I just don't stress about things.
All right. Now, I wanted to say a couple things, because you learned how to drive and you used to look at a map.
Yeah. I love maps.
I want to add to your tip,
yeah,
or whatever we're going to call it. Look at a map before you go. Then put on your GPS. If the problem that I am finding in life, but especially with these kids, and I say this as an old person, but no one bothers to find out where they're going because they're just going to get the next step. And that is as inefficient as being,
well,
you know,
and we're back. Looking at a map is helps in, first of all, it's fun, it's
gotta,
nice,
but you've
and
to
it's
orient
situational
yourself.
Awareness. And I always say that's the biggest
but
danger.
If you don't
to
start,
if you don't have situational awareness,
you're already in trouble. And what I am saying is just rely on your GPS.
Unless you have a map in your car, which means get a road atlas, you're not going to do it, because you're going to put it into your Waze and your iPhone, or you're going to put it in your GPS, and that what that doesn't tell you is anything about the juxtaposition of you
and
versus where you're going.
And that is the word situational awareness. And without that, the whole thing is.
But let's face it, we are lucky enough to live it, you know, when we can use these GPSs versus, you know, missing a turn 20 years ago and having to read a map while you're driving on the highway, which was arguably a dangerous situation.
Talk to me
and
about going
age,
to Providence.
I could not even read a map
right
in the car.
No,
right?
Couldn't because agree I, more and very happy for that. Right. But out of that
of
prior experience, what we're sort of attempting to convey is that for those who don't have that prior experience and who think that it's just totally cool, you type in and you just follow the step by step, it's not as efficient. I mean, yes, it will get you there, but prior to doing that, you should still have a sense of where you're going.
Yeah.
That's all. Does that...
I totally agree.
All right. Robin?
So, Jay, back to your weekend, which you just were up there to offer driving instruction or driving experiences for those people who thought they might like to go in and pretend to be a race car driver. I'd love to see Jill show up. I was thinking about Jill having been up there, because she could have gone in and you could have learned what Jay is doing and had some comments for our show based on what you thought it was all about and whether or not it was good, fascinating for you, and whether you learned anything. I happened to sit there while Jay was, a driver was in Jay's simulation system, and there were comments going on by the people who were watching this kid drive about his efficiency going around the track, and they were saying, oh, he dove into the turn too quickly and had to overbrake to slow down or this and that kind of thing, which gets to the point of it can be very instructional for driving on highways. And it would be a good way for a lot of kids maybe to learn how to drive cars safely.
Simulation is great. They've used it in aviation, forever.
Right.
The biggest problem you're going to have, and we can discuss that some other time, is that a simulator costs more than a Toyota Corolla that all driving schools
driving school.
Use.
Yes,
And so your cost of education is not going to be lesser.
He is Robin Leach. I'm sorry to cut you off. He is Jay DeMarc, and this is Car Keys.